I will be reading from Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. To Adam he said, "Because you listened to your wife and ate the fruit from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat from it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat from food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and dust you will return."
Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Chris and Charity. Thank you for being here with us today. What a wonderful time of worship we've had. Really happy to have these guys with us. Just your bright, smiling faces up here. Is not saying anything, Brent, about you, okay? It's wonderful, though, to have Chris here and leading us. We've known Chris a long time. I've known Chris a long time. Chris and Paul were college roommates. So we've known Chris since way back in Lipscomb days for those guys. And I think they are sworn to secret pact here that you cannot divulge a lot of information. So don't go up and try to press Chris for a lot. I don't know if Paul's got any stories about Chris, but we are just so glad to have you guys here with us today. Today also, Marika Z's last Sunday with us for a time. I'm glad you're in here right now, Marika. Marika's going to be in France this year, teaching English there. And there's probably some work for you here too, but since graduating from college, Marika has been, of course, as the Z's do, very involved in the congregation and in the life and the work of the congregation over the year. One of the big things she's been doing is working at the after school over at Willow Branch, but she's involved herself in, of course, many different things during this time. And that's a Z for you, right? They are just committed and so dedicated and working always in God's kingdom. So we've been glad to have her here. Know that she's going to do wonderful things this year over in France too. So we're glad for you. We'll be praying for you during this time, Marika, and we love you. When we're talking about work, this is Labor Day weekend. Marika's a good one to be pointing to. It's not always easy when we think about work. It's not always easy to see how God is using the work that we do, is it? We're made in the image of God, and so God, that means must have a direction for us in life, must have a purpose for us in life, but it can be hard to figure out what that is sometimes. It's even hard when you read the Bible to figure out sometimes how that can guide us and what our purpose and direction in life is. We're only three chapters in here in chapter 3 of Genesis, and already we've got a couple of very different pictures of what work can look like. Chapter 2 told us, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it." So they weren't just laying around in the shade in Eden. There was work to be done there. Even in God's ideal world, there's work. But by the next chapter, as Matt read, after Adam and Eve disobey God, they eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, work starts to look a lot like punishment sometimes. They're going to survive through painful toil and the sweat of their brow. And childbirth, you see where it gets the word labor. It truly becomes labor. So is work a blessing or is it a curse? Well, we need both of these pictures because both of these pictures reflect our experiences in the world. Sometimes work is just incredibly fulfilling. We find meaning in our work when we sense that we're using our talents well and that we're serving God's purposes. Other times, work seems like a burden, and we dream about what we might be doing if we didn't have to do this job just to put food on the table. Genesis 3 here shows us that it's human sin that distorts our understanding and experience of work. You make work mean too little, and we fail to contribute to our own survival or to the survival of other people. If you make work mean too much, then it can consume you. And we neglect other things that are important responsibilities of being human. You give some folks too much power over other people's work, and they can create a misery as they misuse and they abuse God's purposes. And that's what sin does, whether it's with relationships, with worship, with creation, or with work. God's good purposes by sin are warped and obstructed. Is this inevitable? Can our work here on the other side of Eden be redeemed? What does work aligned with God's purposes look like? I want to ask you a question to start here. Who was the first person in the Bible that it was said that they were filled with the Spirit of God? Who's the first person you think in the Bible it was said they were filled with the Spirit of God? Now, the Bible doesn't throw around labels like that just randomly. So it had to be somebody important, right? Was it Adam? It's not Adam. Is it Noah? No. What about later on? Abraham? No. Joseph? Moses? None of those. You probably saw that coming. It's a guy named Bezalel. Who was Bezalel? This is in Exodus chapter 31. Bezalel isn't a prophet. He's not a priest. Certainly not a king. He wasn't a great warrior. He didn't write part of the Bible that we know of anyway. He was a working class guy. He was a craftsman. He was an artisan. He was a skilled designer. He could work in metalwork, in masonry, and in woodwork. He could work with his hands. He could work with his mind. He had an artistic ability and flair. And God picked this guy to build a place of worship in the middle of the wilderness, the tabernacle. And the Lord said to Moses, "See, I've chosen Bezalel, and I filled him with the Spirit of God, with wisdom, with understanding, with knowledge, and all kinds of skills." All kinds of skills. And who gave Bezalel those abilities? God did. They came from God. I'm continually amazed at people's talents. It's just amazing to see people's talents. Some people are so artistic. Amazing. Other people, it's like they can fix or build anything. Just, you know, they don't have to read a manual. They can just see it and fix it and make it right. Some of you are skilled with children. Other people are skilled at caring for older people. Some of you are really strong. Some of you are really gentle. Some people have minds for organization. Other people can think out of the box and come up with great new ideas. There are just so many different ways that people are gifted. It's wonderful. Just in this, in this room, in this congregation, such a wonderful collection of talents and gifts. And all this diversity is God-given. It comes from God. Whatever your talent, whatever your gift, you are meant to use it for God's purposes in this world. And when we use our talents and our gifts, you know, think about a time in your life, those moments in your week, where you're really using your talents and or skills that you have, and you know you're using them for good purposes. There's just a rightness in it, and you feel a sense of, I don't know if joy is enough of a word to contain it. Now, think about what that feeling is like. Now, some researchers study this in people, and they've labeled it flow. Have you ever heard this term? Flow. Because that's kind of what it feels like when you're just in that moment, when everything is lining up, the things that you're good at, your passions, the skills, your gifts, and the moments in time when you're called on to work for good purposes and you're using those things. And when they come together, it doesn't really even seem like work at all, does it? And time just seems to fly by. And it's really important to know where you feel that sense of energy, where you feel that sense of joy and rightness as you work. That's a guide that God's placed in us to show us some of the ways that God wants to use us in this world. The writer Frederick Buechner has a pretty well-known, he said something once that was, I think, really descriptive here. He said, "The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet." And when you're in that moment, it's an amazing place and moment to be in. We need to discover. We need to help place ourselves in those places, doing work that gives us deep gladness. And you know, it can be found in most any kind of work. And it should be able to be found in most any kind of week. I sometimes wonder if Bezalel wished at times that he had different abilities. Maybe the ability to be a great writer or a great speaker or a great leader somehow. Maybe he thought, you know, that would be so much more of an important job. Maybe he thought, you know, all I'm doing here is making stuff. It's going to rot away. It's going to rust. It's going to be gone one day. You know, just then, just as it is now, some jobs were certainly held up as being more important than others. And that's one of the ways sin can twist the truth about work, because God alone knows the full and lasting importance of the work that we do. God alone. Some preachers use their ability to preach, which we typically think of as a pretty good thing, mainly just so they can have a comfortable life. They think, this is a good job that I can do. I can have a comfortable life doing it. And now I kind of deserve to get the credit for it. There are other people, they might be emptying waste baskets, but they do it, well, in order to give their family survival, to feed their family. But also they think, I really enjoy seeing people enjoy clean places, orderly places to do their work or to be in the hospital to deal with a sickness or whatever in their life. And maybe during that time too, they are absolutely wondrous at encouraging other people. And it just comes in the course of their day, every day, all day. And they give people, they lift people around them, they encourage them, they heal the people that are around them. So which of those two people accomplishes more in the long run? I have no doubt in my mind who accomplishes more. So much depends on what we're trying to accomplish in our work, how we see our work, how we're trying to use our work. And it very much depends, too, on who we ultimately think and see ourselves as that we are working for. Who are we working for? Who do we see ourselves working for? You think about this guy, Bezalel. What did he do? Yeah, he was working with stuff that's going to waste away one day. But what he did, he carved out a space in the world where holiness could flourish. He made space in people's lives for God. He helped people learn God's will. He helped people do God's will in their lives and in the world. And he used the eyes of an artist. He used the hands of a craftsman. And through that, he reflected God's goodness and God's glory into the world. That's living as the image of God. And through, he must have come to understand at some point that God can take our work and lift it to absolutely amazing purposes. He'd probably been preparing himself for this for some time. I think of him back in Egypt. He must not have thought about himself just working for Pharaoh's tool and die company. He had to see himself ultimately as always seeking to be working for God. And the Apostle Paul in the New Testament says a most amazing thing. He says, even slaves, even you who are slaves, he was talking to Christian people who were slaves, even you should see the work that you do as work for God. How do you do that? And Paul didn't say that because he thought slavery was a fine job to have. He knew that it was a terrible and dehumanizing position in life. And at other places, he said everything that he could think of to encourage and dignify people who found themselves in that position. And he told slave owners who also are suffering in sin to see and treat those people that they considered slaves as their brothers and as their sisters. And that's a radical thought. He's well aware, Paul is, that we just often in life don't have full control over the places we find ourselves, over the positions we find ourselves in, over the things that happen to us, over the people who seem to have control over our lives. Maybe you're in a job right now and it's not the one that you want. Maybe you will, or maybe you won't ever get that job that you want. You may be doing a job that underutilizes your talents. You may not be appreciated. You may not be earning enough to make ends meet. You may be mistreated. And it may or it may not be something that you have to put up with for a long time. How can you see, how can we see, even in those times, that it's God that we're working for? How God can use our work? You probably remember back a couple of decades ago, people wearing those WWJD bracelets. What would Jesus do? And that little "what would Jesus do" idea came from a book, In His Steps, written by a minister in the late 1800s in Topeka, Kansas. His name was Charles Sheldon. And Charles Sheldon wanted to make his ministry relevant to the lives of the members of his church. And one of the things he did at one point, he took a 3-month sabbatical, and he spent that time going to every part of Topeka, Kansas, to see how people lived and see how they made a living. He attended classes at a local college. He went on a job, with streetcar workers. He went to the offices of lawyers and doctors and accountants. He hung out on the railroad yard. He went to and watched people work in dry goods stores and hardware stores. He ran a printing press one day, and he spent a week with a homeless person looking for work. He wanted to understand the lives of people, the people in his community and in his congregation, and he wanted his preaching to reflect that reality. Because most people, you know, spend over half of their waking hours at work. We're going to spend so much of our lives at work, and that includes not just the paying jobs that we have, of course, it includes the work of caring for people, for children, for others, for households. The Bible doesn't tell us to put obedience to God or the practice of our spiritual lives over here into a box that we open for a few hours a week or one day a week. Remember the fourth commandment. 6 days you'll labor and do all your work, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. The fourth commandment there about the Sabbath has the whole week in mind. Work too. There's 6 days of work. You've heard people preach sermons that make you feel guilty about keeping the Sabbath, how about a sermon that makes you feel guilty about not working 6 days a week? Just as God made and loves the Sabbath, so God made and loves and does work. There was work for human beings even in Eden, even in God's ideal world. Work is a necessary part of our lives. It's supposed to be a good part of our lives. When Charles Sheldon of WWJD fame saw during his 3 months there in Topeka, one of the things that he noticed was that black mothers had to work outside the homes very often to help support their families. And so one of the ideas that he had, his church established the first kindergarten for African-American children west of the Mississippi River. This is like in the 1880s. And one of the children in that kindergarten was a little boy named Elisha Scott. And Sheldon later on helped Elisha Scott enroll in a vocational school. And Scott excelled at school. He went on and earned a law degree and practiced law in Topeka, Kansas. Elisha Scott eventually had a son who he named Charles Sheldon Scott. And Charles Sheldon Scott went on to become a lawyer too. And in 1954, he went before the Supreme Court and argued the case of Brown versus Board of Education, which he successfully argued. Who can know the impact of our work in the world? Only God. Faithfulness to God's purposes in our work that has ramifications beyond our imagining. When we work to carve out whatever space in our world that we are given, to carve out a place for holiness there, for God's holiness to take root there, God is going to do great things in that. Human work, as God would have it, what is it? It is an expression. It is meant to be an expression of love. Have you ever thought of your work like that, as an expression of love? Of course, it's love expressed for our family as we provide for them. But think about all the ways your work, the work that you do right now, how your work can be love. How can your work reflect the love and the purposes of God? When we use our work to reflect God's goodness and glory, then in those moments we sense the deep brokenness of this world is being remade until that great day that Christ, and through Christ, God is going to make everything new. So thank you for being here today. Consider this question: how can your work be an expression of love? Join in what God is doing in the world today. Let's sing one more song. Let's stand.